Today, I have a wonderful guest, Jerome Brook, Executive Director of the Ayn Rand Institute, who knows a great deal about the daily world that people need to know, including me. A lot of things I don't know, but would like to. I had Dr. Brook on a while back to talk about foreign policy, and today, an even more abstruse subject, to me at least, economics, of which I know almost zero. So I'm not asking here today about theoretical economics, but about the economic situation of the world, what it is, where it came from, what can be done about it. So I'm going to start, Jerome, by plunging into just a description of the way things are today. What do you think is a crucial indicative of our situation? People say we're in a crisis, we're in a recession, or we're in the midst of the next dip of a recession, and then they talk about unemployment and deficit and housing. Are those all interconnected? Is there one or two central things? Where would you plunge in to tell us what is wrong with us economically? What is the disaster?
Well, I think that the probably the most indicative thing in terms of the disaster that is our economy today, I think there are two things. I would look at one is economic growth, our ability to create wealth, to produce goods, to grow the standard of living of, you know, a significant number of Americans. Americans overall are productive people. They can and do produce. And yet right now, the sense is that there's no real wealth creation. There's no economic growth. And I think related, strongly related to that, is unemployment. I mean, the fact that people cannot find jobs and the fact that a significant number of them don't even look for jobs, are not even bothering to search for jobs. But even the people who really want to work, who really want to be productive, our economy is not creating jobs, and that's an unhealthy situation in a truly free market.
And that's a consequence of the inability to invest?
Well, we can talk about why that is, okay. But right now, just in terms of the signs of what represents the decline.
Right.
So in a truly free market, in a capitalist economy or semi-capitalist, an economy that's close to capitalism, what you get is more jobs are created than there are people to fill them. That is the experience of the United States in the 19th century, the United States during periods of economic growth during the 20th century. It's the condition in a place like Hong Kong or in places where there's relative economic freedom, more jobs. So the fact that there are people looking for jobs and can't find them, the fact that entrepreneurs are not investing and hiring people, the fact that companies are shrinking and not growing, that is an indication of real economic sickness.
And you would say the other things are merely indicators associated with it, like, for instance, high taxes and inability to control the deficit?
So those are causes. So the question is, what is causing this this economic condition or what I think is really becoming an economic disaster? Why can't people find jobs? And I think it's caused by, you know, several things. But at the bottom, it's caused by statism. It's caused by too much government intervention in the economy. Right now, it's caused by too much government spending, way too much government regulation, taxes that are too high and that penalize investment and penalize business. And then it's caused by economic mistakes that have been made over decades, of redistribution of wealth, of entitlements, and the cause for maybe the crisis as we feel it right now is the financial crisis and the mistakes that have been made by government over the last 10 years. And those, you know, really the Federal Reserve keeping interest rates below the rate of inflation, causing money to flow into, causing interest rates to be so low that everybody borrowed money and poured it into housing and housing prices went up and that had to collapse at some point, and we're feeling the consequence of that, of government housing policy, which funneled all that money from the Federal Reserve into housing, again, causing this housing bubble and the subsequent collapse. So over the last 10 years or more, we've seen massive malinvestment. That is wrong investment, bad investment. Investment that wouldn't happen in a free market. Investment that was motivated by political reasons, motivated by government policy. And what we're feeling right now is an attempt by the market, by the forces of the free market, to correct that, and government not letting them correct it, and therefore creating other problems as a consequence.
So is it right or wrong? I somehow have acquired an opinion just from reading the papers and watching what the Republicans evade, that the most crucial thing is to oppose and eliminate entitlements, and that is driving government spending and the deficit and taxes, and then creating such a climate, and would be a big blow to the welfare state. Is that true, or is that just one of five or six equal things that would have to be done?
In my view, there are two things that have to be done in the short term, and then one that has to be done in the longer term. The two things that have to be done in the short term is government spending has to be slashed, not only in the present, which nobody, by the way, is talking about. Nobody, not the most radical Republican out there, wants to cut government spending now. They're all talking about 10 years from now, maybe we'll cut something. It has to be cut now. It has to be cut in a convincing way that the market really believes in the future. That is, the deficits and government spending is going to decline dramatically, much more dramatically than any Republican is proposing right now, into the future. And that's going to require cutting entitlements. Second,
serious cutting entitlements.
Yeah. And we can talk about how to do that and all of that. But second is, you've got to cut regulations. You've got to take all the rules and all the constraints off of businesses' back. So, you know, immediately, I think what should be done tomorrow, if you could, is get rid of Obamacare, get rid of Dodd-Frank, which is this big banking regulation, and get rid of Sarbanes-Oxley, which is passed under the Bush administration in 2002, supposedly in response to...
Just tell me, if you did all of that, I understand why it's essential to a flourishing, healthy economy, but would that impact the deficit the way cutting entitlements would?
In an indirect way, it would, because what would happen if you cut the regulations is you'd immediately get business activity. So the economy would grow, you'd get people employed again, you'd get businesses making more money, but primarily you'd get more and more people employed. And whether we like it or not, actually revenue to the government would actually grow. So in that sense, it would have an impact on the deficit. And if you continue to cut spending, then you can start talking about really cutting taxes. And I say cutting taxes is secondary to cutting spending, because the fact is the government has to get money somehow. And if it doesn't tax, it borrows. And the difference, purely economically speaking, between borrowing and taxing, it doesn't really matter. Both are sucking money out of the private economy and taking it away from productive activity into the government coffers.
But cutting spending, since we don't do that much on the military, consists of going back to cutting Medicare and Social Security, the entitlements. Isn't that true?
Yes, there's a lot to cut beyond that. So, for instance, in substance,
what would it be?
Well, I mean, the government right now has, I can't remember the number, but dozens of alphabet soup regulatory agencies. Mm-hmm. If we do what I suggest, which is cut regulations dramatically, just firing half the people in these agencies would save a lot of money. We're talking about tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars. Okay. I think you can cut somewhere close. Now, I actually think you can cut some defense spending, because I think there's a lot of waste, for example, in building Afghanistan and building Iraq. I think you could cut $500 trillion without really cutting entitlements. But then long term, if you now start projecting into the future, you have to cut entitlements. The U.S. government, the three entitlements, Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, have a deficit. If you look out 50, 70 years and you bring all the money back, you do what we call in finance a present value of that, the deficit on the money we pay in taxes and the promises we've made is $100 trillion. $100 trillion. That has to be cut, and for that you have to slash entitlements over time.
Now let me ask you, if people didn't listen to this and the worst comes to worst, and we reach bankruptcy, can you tell me, what is bankruptcy? What results would it have on our life on a daily basis that our current situation doesn't already have? Well, is it a disaster or just an economic shuffling of figures?
Well, no, it's a disaster. And the reason is that governments don't go bankrupt. There's really no such thing as... And now, Greece can go bankrupt. And we can talk about why Greece can go bankrupt and why the U.S. cannot. California can go bankrupt, but the U.S. government cannot, because the U.S. government can print as much money as they want. So if they owe me $100 trillion, all they have to do is print $100 trillion, and that's easy. So the way bankruptcy manifests itself is through inflation. And through really through hyperinflation. That's the way you destroy the value of the debt. And so the people who've lent you money are devastated.
Like the 1923
like what happened in the 20s in Germany,
Weimar, yeah.
What happened in South America during the 1980s. I lived in Israel when we had 1500% inflation a year. 1500% inflation. It's devastated economically. It's devastating morally. That you're working, the money comes in within minutes. It's worth less than the work you put in. It is, and it destroys investment. It destroys long-term planning. Nobody can plan long-term. So what happens in terms of our lives is, and I think for those people today in America who have a job, their standard of living has gone down a little bit. Their 401ks have gone down a little bit. But they're not really feeling, real economic devastation. Bankruptcy is real economic devastation. Standard of livings go down. The quality of life
your money is worth,
goes down. You can't buy the nice new car. You have to buy an old car. You can't afford a new television. You start selling stuff. And unemployment could go much higher than it is today. And if you have dramatic unemployment and people can't buy things at the groceries, you could risk civil unrest. I mean, if really we go bankrupt,
your savings have become nothing, basically.
Well, your savings are devastated now that your savings are completely devastated.
Insurance or contracts, etc., from 5 years
ago. So Americans' wealth has gone down. Now, the only thing that keeps up with inflation is Social Security, funnily enough, because Social Security is indexed. So the liabilities the government has on Social Security are not cured by inflation, but all the other liabilities are. And that's why even inflation doesn't solve the ultimate problem. Ultimately, they have to restructure or phase out, what we'd prefer is phase out, the entitlement programs.
Or else it collapse. Well, what they did in Germany is they said the paper was worthless and introduced a brand new currency. So is that a possibility?
Well, we did that in Israel. In Israel, they wiped out 4 zeros over time. They did it twice. Introducing new currencies, but that's just paper shuffling. The fact that you have a new currency doesn't really make any difference. What makes a difference is the inflation. And of course, before they do inflation, what they could do is they could, for example, what Greece is doing now, or what Greece is being forced to do, is they start laying people off, they start raising taxes, they drive the economy into a much, much worse situation than you are today. And we as a consequence, all of our standard of livings, they don't just stay flat, they actually decline. And they suck more and more resources out of the productive economy, the productive individuals in the economy, and waste even more of that. So
presumably as this goes on, as it gets worse, people... especially younger people begin to think, whatever system we have now, this is not the right kind of system. American ideas were good for 3 centuries ago, but not for now, and they become more ripe to someone with a pro-dictatorial philosophy to say, this is where your secular attitude has gotten you.
Certainly history would suggest that. You mentioned Germany. That's certainly the case. Their economic devastation is an opportunity for strongmen to say, I know the answers. And the answers, they won't call it communism. They can't call it socialism because those failed. But they'll call it something new that is basically statism to take over and take control.
But now, you once said to me in connection with California, which can go bankrupt technically, that it would be even more frightening than the picture that you're describing here for the United States, if I understood you. You said, if California runs out of money, they won't be able to pay the police force. And if so, the police may disband, in which case it will become an armed wilderness, your physical safety, which sounds to me worse than a slowly deteriorating inflation.
Well, one of the unique characteristics of the United States is that the police is local. Right, and the police is dependent on local funds. And one of the horrific things that are going on right now all across the country is that as these budgets are getting constrained, the first thing that they're cutting is not social programs. It's not entitlement. It's not the redistribution. It's police and fire and the things that are legitimate functions of government.
That makes perfect sense because their idea of priorities.
And it's also a way to really cause the taxpayers to feel the pain and therefore to vote for tax increases. So they, you know, and we're seeing that in California today. They're cutting the things that are going to cause the most pain and therefore to justify an increase in taxes.
Okay, a brief answer to this one, then we'll take a break till part two. If you had to give an estimate, knowing the whole situation as you do, is California going to go bankrupt in the next 10 years?
No, because I think the federal government will step in and bail it out.
Okay, on that, we'll take a break.